The date today is July 28, 1983. The interview is taking place at Mrs. Ort's home and is being conducted by Cindy Klein.
Siegfried Eidsness, that's my maiden name. E-I-D-S-N-E-W-S.
E-I-D-N-E-S?
No, E-I-D-S-N-E-S-S.
Okay. So that's Siegfried Eidsness?
Eidsness, that was my maiden name, so my married name is Ort, O-H-R-T.
Okay. And when and where were you born?
I was born at my home place, which was named Eidsness, near Bergen, Norway.
And what is your date of birth?
September 26, 1891.
Okay. And what were your parents' names?
My father's name was Ivar, I-V-A-R, Eidsness.
And your mother?
My mother's name, maiden name was Ragnhild Fjelde. Ragnhild, R-A-G-N-H-I-L-D. And Fjelde, F-J-E-L-D-E.
Okay.
Fjelde.
And what about brothers and sisters? Did you have brothers and sisters also?
Oh, lots of them.
And can you tell me their names?
Well, the first one was Bertha, B-E-R-T-H-A. And the first brother was John. The third child was Reginald, R-E-G-I-N-A-L-D. And the next one was Inger, I-N-G-E-R. The next one was a brother, O-L-A-F. And then I come on the sixth one. Another brother, Bert, B-E-R-T. The next one was Hannah, girl. And the last one was Edwin. I didn't give the Norwegian names because, well, these are the names we went by most of our life. Mine was not changed, and Olaf was not changed. The others were all changed. That's the system they seem to have. When they come to this country, they change the spelling of their names.
Did any of your brothers and sisters change their last name, or did they all keep the...
No, the sisters were married.
Right. Uh-huh.
Otherwise, they were the same.
Uh-huh.
The boys were all the same.
Okay. Now, what can you tell me about your family life in Norway? What kind of things did your parents do? What kind of community did you live
right.
in?
We lived in a rural community on a fjord, on the banks of a fjord by that name, Eidsness. And my father made his living by working in Bergen. there was not work enough for him to make a living on this little place.
So what did he do in Bergen then?
In Bergen, he worked for a newspaper, and he also worked, he had several things going there. He was involved in a bank, and also he was a sergeant in the military, and I don't know, he did various things, but I'm not too familiar with it. He wrote articles, and he wrote witty things, and he was quite talented, but I don't have any record of anything he did, and I was too young to recall. But he made his living in Bergen, and my mother had plenty to do. She had a child every year, and also took care of a few cows. She came from a mountain family where they had been in dairying and made cheese and things like that. So she did the farm work, whatever it was done. It was a little farm place.
So, was Eidsnes a large community?
No, it was a small community.
Were the houses scattered?
They were small farms. I don't know what they called them, farms or not. They had acreage, small acreage. They had cows and sheep and stuff like that.
And so the largest, nearest town was Bergen.
Yeah.
And if you needed to get extra things, is that where you went, or did you just get them from other people in the area?
Well, there was in those days, the families worked, they made their own clothes, they even made their own, they had sheep, and they used their own wool. My mother had a spinning wheel, and I can remember winding up the yarn for her, and things like that. And then she had a dressmaker come in to sew for us. They had a shoemaker come in to make shoes, things like that. She did a lot of things, but she couldn't do everything. So that's the kind of a family work on a small place.
Well, what did you and your brothers and sisters do?
Well, we went to school, and we played out. I remember being quite an active child, and my brothers would make a big swing between two trees, and one boy in each tree. They'd swing me almost around in a circle. That's one of the things I can remember clearly. And we played in the boats. There was a little inlet where we played in the boats. We did fishing and stuff like that. One of my brothers snared birds. We frown on that today, but then it was sport. And what else did I do? We played games. I remember playing with rocks. We'd pick up little rocks and throw them up in the air, and they'd land on the back of our hand, and we'd throw them up and catch them again. That was one of our favorite pastimes. And we played, I remember, there was a rocky ledge on the place, or near home, where the children used to meet, play house, or play weddings, or play school, whatever. And I was back to Norway a few years ago, and I looked for that place. But they had put fences up. I couldn't find it. I couldn't get to it. But that was one of our main pastimes. And we had, they celebrated the 17th of May. That's their, you probably know something about their celebration. They used to march. The community would get together and march two by two to the schoolhouse and back home. And somebody would be carrying a big flag at the head of it, and then each one of the children would carry a smaller flag. We look forward to that. And another thing that I can recall was they had a certain day in June when they get together in the evening, gather up a lot of brush, and we kids used to help gather up these sticks and whatever, put them in a big pile and had a big bonfire in the evening. That was one of the special days that they celebrated. I don't know what, I don't remember what they called it. It had a name. But we, as children, we look forward to that. It was a big event.
What can you tell me about going to school?
Yes. We started school at the age of 7. And they had school 6 days a week, Saturday as well as other days. Am I speaking loud enough? And I can remember the first day of school, my sister Inger and her friend, who were 3 years older than I, took me to school. I was very excited. They each held a hand and escorted me into the schoolroom. And the schoolmaster was a young man who took me over, set me in a seat, and gave me some instructions. The first thing in arithmetic I learned was to write a 4. He asked me to write a 4, and I wrote it upside down, see? And he said, in our school, we do it this way. I remember that quite clearly. And we used slates and slate pencils. I was given one. I felt very important. I'm a schoolgirl now. And this schoolhouse is named Vassel, V-A-S-S-E-L. There's a community by that name. It was right near a lake. And in the winter, you used to skate on the lake. I don't recall ever swimming in there. And girls were not allowed to go swimming. They could wade, but the boys would swim. I never learned to swim. And I don't know, we had a lot of freedom. We roamed all over and picked berries. There was a red berry that we picked called teacher bear. T-Y-T-T-E-B-A-E-R. And we used to love to pick them. And the older children would take them to the city of Bergen and sell them at the market. We had relatives there where they'd stay overnight and come back by boat, of course. And that was a big event. You send two of the older children together.
How long did you continue in school? Did you?
Well, we left Norway when I was 10.
Uh-huh.
I had been in school 3 years. And the school, as I remember, we had to memorize our lessons. And I wasn't very good at that. I used to get up real early every morning to do my studying. We were very well disciplined. We did our work, and I was not the best student, but I did try to memorize. However, I don't remember too much of it today. But another thing I want to mention, religious training was done in the schoolroom. We had no Sunday school. So we had the catechism and the Bible history. Those are two books that we studied from. And I don't remember the other lessons that we were taught there, but I'm sure we had geography and other lessons, other studies too.
So was this religious instruction aside from church on Sunday? Did you do it on Sunday, or was this a part of your regular school week?
It was a part of the regular school. On Sundays, the neighbors used to gather, and they had a big boat, big enough for the neighbors who wanted to go to church. And about four men would row across the fjord to their church, and the children came along, and we sat in the church. Those long services, I remember as children, my mother used to have us on the floor in front of her. And the seats were high, the back of the seats were high, so we couldn't be seen. And we'd be playing on the floor there while the service was going on. And we got awfully restless, of course. And how she kept us quiet, I'll never know, but she did. She was a very good disciplinarian. And after the service, the thing that we looked forward to was getting out and looking at the graves. The graveyard was right in the same area. And I can still remember admiring the roses in that graveyard. Beautiful roses.
Can you tell me anything about your grandparents? Do you have memory of your grandparents?
I have memories of my grandfather. I was very fond of my grandfather. He was a very fine old man. He was living with his second wife, and she had very little interest in us. They were living in one part of the house. The house was built with a two-story wooden structure, and we had half of it, the bigger half. They had their room called Stua, S-T-U-E, and they had their bed in there and their entire household equipment was in this room. And aside from that, there was a storeroom which we were never allowed to go into. And we were never allowed to go to visit them without permission. But Grandfather was a very kind man. I used to follow him around the grounds, and when he went fishing, have me in the boat with him and things like that. So I have very pleasant memories of my grandfather.
Can you tell me his name?
His name was, wait just a minute, Johannes. And Eichness. One thing I remember about my grandmother, this was his second wife, not our real grandmother. She had a great big apron she wore, and whenever she went out someplace away from the house, she'd gather up sticks and things for the for her stove, and she was always packing the stuff with her. They were very thrifty, and she was especially so.
Okay, are there any special times that you remember in your childhood, like weddings or Christmas or?
Yes. I can remember Christmas, my first Christmas at the schoolhouse. Our mother seldom left her home. She was busy there. But she did go to the Christmas program with us at Christmas time. We had a big Christmas tree that was decorated, and we danced around the Christmas tree and sang Christmas carols. And the little, let's see how did I go? They had one ring of adults. The next one would be coming the opposite direction with teenage children. And at the very outside were the little ones. And we'd go in different directions. And that was the most, that was a highlight of our celebration. And I don't recall any programs. It was just a free and easy evening. And they served refreshments. And that was where I drank my first cup of cocoa. We really felt that we had something special. Chocolate, they called it. And it was made there, and we enjoyed that so much. I don't recall too much else that we did. Those are the things that come to my memory. Also, during Christmas season, they celebrated, I think, for 2 weeks or even more. And they, during this time, they met at the neighbor's house and had refreshments and sang Christmas carols. We used to look forward to that. We were never allowed to go to anybody's home without special permission. And in those, at those times, our mother went with us.
Now, when did you immigrate?
Well, that's quite a story. My father was involved in many programs in Bergen, and he had been, he was the kind of a man who was quite talented, and he was called upon for services. And he was very, very generous with his time and talents, to the extent that his family was neglected. So in time, when I was about 9, 10, he got himself into trouble because of this, and he couldn't fulfill his obligations, financial obligations, so he slipped out of the country. That, I understand, was quite common in those days. His income wasn't sufficient to take care of his big family. So, my mother disposed, they were about to lose property, their home. Their home, of course, was the grandfather had passed the home to the eldest sons, the custom in those older country, I think. And the house was about to be taken away from the family. So my mother and her family, her father had been very helpful. And I think he was more practical than on my father's side. And he came to our home and helped her, and also a brother, helped her pack things and dispose of things. They were seized by the government, I think. So I don't know too much about those things, but they had to get out of there, and she was doing the best she could. And she had three brothers in South Dakota who had farms. They were just young men who had recently come to America, and they had acquired farms in South Dakota. And they helped her and sent money and help, whatever help they could, so she could pack her family to America. Also, they needed help, so they decided to send two of the older children over before we were ready to go. and my sister Inger, who was then 13, and John, who was 16, were sent tickets to come by themselves, which they did. They arrived in South Dakota in time to do the help that they needed. I'm not sure whether it's spring or fall. I have a feeling it was in the springtime, but I don't know for sure. So they were gone, but my older sister, who was 17, was regarded as an adult then, and she was very helpful. She had been sort of a second mother to the rest of us. And there was another young lady in the community who wanted to come to America, who got in on this. They were all helped by the brothers who were in South Dakota. They sent the money for the tickets. And we took off by boat. I can remember my mother hiding things in the hayloft for her family, rather than having them taken away. She had a saddle there that was never used, I guess. At least I don't remember ever using. My grandfather had a little horse that it was more of a pet than a workhorse, and the saddle belonged to him. She hid the saddle in the hay. I can recall that clearly. And there must have been other things, too. And she brought her hand sewing machine and her spinning wheel with her. She couldn't part with them. They were shipped along with other things that she didn't want to part with. And the day that we left, I remember that clearly. I had a special friend, one of the neighbors that I wanted to say goodbye to. And when the rest of the family were carrying their stuff down to the boat landing, I slipped around and went down to this hole to say goodbye to that family. And then my grandfather, of course, came down. He was very sad because he realized he'd never see us again. And one of my brothers, Bert, who was next to me, was his special pet. And the tears came and rolled down his cheeks. He says, I know I shall never see any of you again. This is a sad moment. And I described it in my book, in my story. He wandered back to his home with tears rolling down his cheeks. He returned to an empty house. So I tried to make it dramatic. I wasn't so good at it. But and we were loaded into that big community boat, and the neighbors rowed us over to the little landing where the boat picked us up, and we went to Bergen, stayed overnight in Bergen. And the following day, we were taken by boat to Liverpool, England, across the North Sea, I think called it. And it was very rough. One thing I forgot to mention, my 14-year-old brother, who was quite adventurous, got away from us out into the street gang in Liverpool and was busy. We stayed there 3 days while we were waiting for the big boat to take us across the Atlantic. And he got away from us and didn't return, and he had the whole crew looking for him. Sent the police out to hunt him up, but he finally found him. He got lost. He couldn't find his way back. And I remember that so well. But he was always getting into trouble because he was too adventurous. And my mother wasn't able to watch all of us. And it was very difficult there. For 3 days we didn't have anything to do, and we couldn't go out. We were in limited quarters. But we made up for that when we got on the big boat. And I think that I recall, I think the line, that passenger line, is still in existence. It's called CUNARD. Have you ever heard of it?
No.
I see it every once in a while. Well, we were piled up in steerage. There were bunks, and oh, the smell of that boat was terrible. There were people from other lands too, you see. We had never been away from our little home place. And we saw these people with so many different costumes and so many different languages spoken. And we were so curious. And we slipped up close to see them and hear them. And our mother was very pleased about that. She tried to keep us under control. But imagine keeping, we were seven of us, under control in a place like that. And she was very seasick, very helplessly so. She had a rough time.
What was the date? Do you remember?
The date, so far as I can remember, the year was 1901. But I don't recall the month.
Do you remember what time of year it might have been?
I believe it was in the springtime, maybe in May or June. But that's guesswork.
And then when you came across, where did you end up?
Boston.
Boston. Okay. And what was your experience coming into Boston?
Well, I can recall when we were told that we were going to land in Boston, and the folks on the boat told us to be watching for land. We hadn't seen anything but water. And that was exciting when we first sighted land. Oh, that was something. And it took us a long time to get landed. There were hundreds of people on that boat. So we had to stand in line a long time, and finally we got up there. They took us on the plank, you know, long plank, and then we got on into a building, immigration building, and everyone had to be checked, and my mother was handle that. And this lady who was with us was a young woman, maybe 20 years or so. And she was not a part of our family, so she had to be handled specially. And I remember the immigration officer asking her, she told him, who had supplied her ticket. He was an unmarried man in South Dakota. And they wanted to know if she was intending to marry him. No, she says she expected to work and pay him back for the ticket. She was quite indignant. She didn't like that question. My mother had to have a place to go. See, they were very particular. You had to be, someone had to be responsible for you so you wouldn't become a dependent on the government. At that time, they were very fussy about that. Well, she had three brothers in South Dakota who were farmers, so we were safe there. We would make our home with them, which cleared her. And we got on they put us on a railroad then to continue on to South Dakota. And the interesting thing that happened on that trip, when we arrived in Chicago, the train rested there for an hour or so. And we were playing around the car, and a strange man approached us with a big grin on his face. He was bearded. We didn't any of us recognize him. And he seemed so happy to see us. And we finally recognized him, my mother did, of course, as our father. He'd been gone several years ago. And he was in trouble, you see, financial trouble with a country back there. So he had disguised himself by allowing his beard to grow. Well, he had been very lonely, and he felt that he would like to have a couple of the children live with him. And my mother was very favorably impressed with the idea, but he usually won out, so he got a couple of the boys. He took two of the boys. Olaf was a year older than he was 11, and Reg was 14. So she let him have those two boys, and they lived with him for about 2 years, and then they got together. They tried to get together again. My mother kept house for a bachelor brother who had a farm with cows and equipment. And he had acquired a drill, you know what, how they drill for water in South Dakota. They were needing more water for the stock, and they had these drilling outfits to drill not way down into the earth for where they found hard water, and they would have windmill to pump it up into tanks for the stock. And two of her brothers had bought a drilling outfit and were working at that kind of work, which paid off better than farming. So my mother was put on one of these farms where there were cows and chickens and pigs, and she could run that with the help of us kids. I was a very good worker. I was 10. I knew nothing but work. They worked their kids in those days. And my brother, who was a year or two younger than I, was also very helpful. And then the two younger ones, Hannah, I think, was about 7, and Edward was 4 or 5 or something like that. They didn't have to work yet. But my mother lived on this place for 4 years, and we got by somehow. I don't know too much about how they managed, but I think my father supported us, and so did the brothers. We lived a very comfortable life.
So this was you were living on an uncle's farm.
Yes.
And what was your father doing in Chicago? Was he still writing?
He was working for a Norwegian newspaper. He was writing. He wrote witty little, can't call it poetry, but something along that line. And also stories. There was quite an influx of Scandinavians coming into the country at that time, and he contacted them and wrote stories about them. And he was doing all right.
So then your two brothers who lived with him, did they come out to live with you after a while, or did they stay with your father?
The family never got together as a family after that. The children were going through their teens, see. Well, I was 10. Well, 4 years later, I was 14, a big, strong girl. And land opened up in North Dakota and Saskatchewan. They had their eyes on that. So my father came out, and he was somewhat of a surveyor. He was quite talented. So he got... He got into the field where he located the incoming settlers who wanted land, and worked at that for some years, and filed on land. He helped the younger boys. They were too young to take land in the States, but in Canada they needed more people, and they encouraged males to come and take homesteads. And by the time the two older boys were 17 and 18, they were permitted to take land, providing their parents were close enough to help them. So that's what happened. My father took up a homestead in North Dakota, right on the boundary line, and he located the boys just across the boundary line in Saskatchewan. That's how they got started.
Did they have a large place? Did they? What did they?
Each one got 160 acres.
Right.
Yeah.
Were the grain was?
Well,
was
there was nothing there then. There was uh-huh. just virgin prairie land. Uh-huh. Nothing. Not a thing. And they built a little shack. There was a cousin that was in on this. He was 18. And the three boys, two were 18, one 17, got land right adjoining each other. And on the corner, they built a shack. You know what a shack is. And they lived, the boys lived in there. And they began to work their land over, remove rocks, and do what they could. And they had to go and work, you know, whenever they could find work. And there was no work on the prairies. They had to go to the towns. And they worked whenever they could. And they, with the help of my father, they made it eventually. And they retained the land. They got title to it. And some of them lived there. And then they got married and... eventually made out all right, sold the land or started something else. That's how they did, by helping each other. There was a farmer came in there with horses and cows and farm machinery, who was one of their neighbors. And they trade off. He needed help and they needed his equipment. So they worked together, and that's how they made a start.
Mm-hmm. Now, when your brothers were going elsewhere to look for work, was that in Canada or was that in North Dakota?
Well, they disregarded the boundary line for a time because the Canadian towns are too far away from them. So they worked, their little towns sprang up along the line, and at the beginning they came to a little town named Ambrose, which was closest, and eventually the immigration people had stations along the line to control it, but this is at the very beginning. See, they hadn't got there yet, but that's how they got started. The larger farms who were in the eastern part of North Dakota needed help with their threshing time. So these boys got work in a threshing room, and they earned the money out of it. They were adults then, you see, and they earned enough to get started with. It was slim pickings what they did. So did everybody else who came in. They helped, most of them got by exchanging labor for whatever they needed. My mother was placed on this North Dakota homestead. My father built a log house, not a log, but a sod house for her.
Mm-hmm.
She had her cows, and there was water in the sloughs, and she milked her cows. She made butter and cheese, and I was farmed out. They couldn't afford to keep me home. I had to go to work in this little town that sprung up. I had another year of school to finish up, and I worked from a board there. But in the fall, one fall when I was 15, they put me on in the shack for the boys. By that time, they had a little heifer with her first calf. And she had to be taken care of. And they wanted to go out and earn money in the threshing rig. So they put me there, and I stayed there for, 5 weeks while they were out working.
Yeah.
We worked every angle we could. I was strong, and I was unafraid. I lived there by myself. There were neighbors, and I was supposed to stay with them. Young neighbor lady who was recently married. I started out, my father left me there. But, and her husband was out thrashing too. But he wasn't strong enough for that work. And he came home unexpectedly one day. And I wasn't about to stay there after he got home, so I went up to the shack and slept on the cot up there. Well, they didn't want to. She felt responsible for me, and she didn't want me. She wanted me to stay. Well, they only had the one bed, and I couldn't see it. No, I refused to go in there, so I managed. I stayed alone. I milked a little heifer, divided the milk, and delivered it to a neighbor who had two little boys, and part of it went into the calf, and part of it was mine, and we got by. I didn't have any butter. There wasn't enough cream.
You said that your father built your mother a sod house. Now, was this, you had spent 4 years with your uncle, and was this after this 4 years you spent with your uncle that your father built the sod house?
Yes.
And this was in the little place of Amrose, is that?
Near Amrose.
Near Amrose, okay.
Amrose was Amrose. 3 weeks old when we came in out there. On one of the first trains that came out there. This is really a pioneer story. And my mother tell you about her. My mother had worked in a coal mine, cooking for miners for several years before she went on the homestead. I skipped that. That should have come after the 4 years on the farm. She was, a part of the family were working in the coal mine. They needed a cook. She was coming up from South Dakota into North Dakota. And she landed at this coal mine. My father and some of the brothers were there at that time. So, and I came with her. I'm going back now a little ways. And I was, I needed to get to school. And they took me to a little town called Portal, which is right on the boundary line. And they put me in with a family there to work for my board and room. And I did, and I took the seventh grade there and passed it. And then we went to Amrose on that one of the first trains that went in there. And they were building their first schoolhouse when I arrived in Amrose. And I went to the very first school and finished up my education there, eighth grade, while I was working for family, where I board and room. And that was in 1906 or 1907, I'm not too sure. By that time, when I was 15, yeah, that would be right. And when the boys came back from their job with their money that they had earned, I was released from this little homestead, and I went into Ambrose to go to school.
Now, was this a Scandinavian community, or was this... How did you learn English? Was this what was taught in the school, or was it a Scandinavian school?
Well, in South Dakota, when I first arrived there, we were Scandinavians in that community, all of us. And they sent me to school, which was English, of course, taught in English. And I was very serious about learning English. I was definitely wanted to be an American girl. And I studied well, and I performed rather well. And our teacher made it clear to most of us were Norwegian people. However, there were two families came from strictly American. Children from their families were strictly American. So we started to speak Norwegian among ourselves. She would not have it. In this school, we speak English, no Norwegian. Well, that suited me fine. I wanted to learn English. And I had no trouble learning English. They started me off in the first grade, and I made six grades during the 4 years I was there. Yeah. So I had no trouble with English. And I have been very much interested in learning to speak well.
Oh, was there a church in your community?
Yes, there was a Lutheran church. I was confirmed in a Lutheran church when I was 14.
Now, was this a Scandinavian church?
Yes.
Norwegian. So were you confirmed in Norwegian?
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. And my mother had been told that I was one of the best students. I hope she was right. I never felt like a good student, but I was well disciplined because she'd done a good job. I feel that when I see the children perform today, I feel like she did a very good job with us because we went along with her. She could use a rod, too. She didn't hesitate. And I know I was not the easiest kid to take care of.
Now, how did you meet your husband?
Well, I worked from the time I was 15. I worked away from home. And when I was... I'm going to skip a few years now. Two of my brothers, the two brothers who had stayed with father in Chicago, when they took land, they finished their obligations to work the land as they were told, or improve it, whatever. And then they got title to their land and they sold it. And he started a business. By that time they were in their 20s, early 20s. They started a business off in a community of homesteaders. They had learned the mining business. They opened up a mine, a coal mine, And one thing led to another. They started a store and a boarding house. And there's a lot of work to be done. And I had been away from home, and I had I'd gone to business school. I had worked a couple of years, and I went to visit them when I was 20. I came back to visit them. They grabbed me. They needed help. So I had business training. They put me in this store to run it. And they went, my older brother, Ray, was quite a promoter. And he wanted to get it, he liked the outdoors. So he bought himself a very fancy little team of horses. They were very fast and strong. And let's see if I can remember the name. They were on Peanuts. It was on Peanuts and I can't recall the other one. Everybody learned about those horses because they were so unusual. They were very fast. And he wanted out in the world, sell insurance, sell equipment, farm equipment, stuff like that. There was all kinds of opportunities for that kind of work. Hail insurance, whatever. He turned out to be a pretty good salesman. So he turned the store over to me. And I was strictly on my own, the whole thing. Ordering, selling, finance, banking, the whole works. And I stayed there. I have never worked so hard in my life as I did that year. And there's another young lady, 19 I think she was, whose family had a homestead there. And she was hired to do the cooking and handle the meals. She made a batch of bread every day, and she took care of the three meals. Once in a while she needed help. I'd lock up the store and come out over and help her. Wait on table, wash dishes, whatever. That's the way we ran that place. It was strictly up to us. We were all young people there in that place. The miners were young men, and we were young girls, and everything was going good. We had no difficulties.
Now, was this in North Dakota or
Saskatchewan?
Saskatchewan, mm-hmm. Okay.
And at the end of 1 year, I'd had enough. I said to my brother, I said, there must be something in life for me besides work. And I'd like to get back into town. I had been in town. And I said, you find yourself another store manager. I had met several men, salesmen who came out to take orders in those days. That's the way they did. We were 25 miles from town. They used to come out every once in a while to take orders, and I met them. And I told them my problems. I'd like to get to town and get a job up there in Moose Jaw. And do you think you could help me find a job? They were working for fruit companies, wholesale. Well, they would try. So they did. One of these fellows had talked to his manager about me, and he had a girl in the office and didn't do very good work. And I could do the whole work. I could do the bookkeeping. I had learned bookkeeping and typing and the whole works. I could do the whole job. And this is where they told me to come up and to see them, and I did. I got the job and went to work the next day.
So there you are in Moose Jaw.
I never had trouble finding work in those days. Uh-huh. Every place I went to, they needed help. It's so different from today. I wasn't, but I didn't have much of a background. I just had the 8th grade education and business.
Where did you take your business training?
Well, I skipped those years. This family that I lived with in Ambrose while going to school, moved to Aberdeen, Washington, and they took me with them. He had a little girl, Joy, who was quite a handful. Her mother was nervous, and I was able to handle her. So they wanted me there to help with her. So I went with them into... Well, that's quite a story. I think you'd like to hear that. The day I got to Aberdeen, I felt so free. I was away from my folks. And I was, they hadn't had any control over me anyway. But I was free to do whatever I wanted. And it made me feel very important. And these people were friends and also my protectors. So as soon as I got there, I said, I'd like to walk downtown to see the town. I walked downtown alone, and I was looking for a job. And I walked off, I looked for the post office. And on the same street as the post office was a little coffee shop. In the corner of their window, they had a little card the waitress wanted. I went in there and ordered me a waffle cup of coffee, which cost me all of 25 cents. And as I paid for my meal, I said to the young man, I would like to see your manager. I am the manager, he said. Man about 25, I guess. So I said, I just came to town and I'm looking for a job. Perhaps I could take this job you're advertising for. He says, have you had any experience? Yes, I have been waiting on tables. I've been working in hotels. And, okay, can you be here at 7 o'clock in the morning? I said, I certainly try. Well, I was there at 7 o'clock in the morning. I worked till 7:30 that night for $8 a week with one afternoon off. Mm-hmm. I think that's a pretty good story. I've been very proud of that.
So, and how long were you in Aberdeen then before you moved to back?
Oh, I worked there for this coffee house for close to a year. By that time, I wanted to get a business course, and I had $100 saved. And I had worked steadily every day since I got there. So the family that brought me out had moved to Portland, and I had to find a place to live. And I worked, I lived at three different places during this year that I was going to business school. Because I wasn't happy with the first one or the second one. The third place I went to, I was happy. I settled down for the rest of the time that I was going to school. And then one of the customers at this coffee house was a Jewish man who was sort of a leader in the community. And he had sort of watched my performance, and he needed a bookkeeper. And I had a friend in the store, where I used to go and see her every once in a while. He had seen me in there, so one day he told her that he would like to talk to me. Next time I came in there, I would like to talk to that young lady. He offered me a bookkeeping job. So that's the way my life was. I never had any difficulty getting jobs. So I worked for him 2 years, and I had time coming for vacation time coming with pay for the first time in my life. And I decided to go back to see my folks. I'd been gone nearly 4 years. And I went back to visit my folks, and when I went to see my brothers, they were running this business and they needed help. I got stuck there for a year. And when I got to Moose Jaw, that's where I met my husband. See, I was 22 then. And I had never gone with boys really much because I've been too busy. And I started to go with this young man, and we got along fine. In a year, I married him. And then I had a job for a while, for life.
So did you and he make your home in Moose Jaw?
For several years. I had this feeling I wanted to get back on the coast to raise my family. And our two oldest babies were born in Moose Jaw. And I kept telling him what a fine place it was, the coast. He'd never been on the coast. So he had an inheritance come from his grandmother. I said, "Now this would be a good time to move." So we took our babies and moved out to the coast.
What year was this?
That was in 19... Oh... 1919. We were married in 1916. By 1919, we had two boys. So we packed up our two boys and sold our whatever we couldn't move and came to live in the coast. We didn't know which town we were going to. But these friends of mine had moved to Portland by this time, so we went to visit them. And I had a sister in California I wanted to visit, so I went down there. And then we came back and located in Medford, Oregon. We liked that country. And that's... Well, I covered more than you asked for, haven't I?
Oh, no, that's fine. Well, when you settled in Medford then, were you into a business, or did you...
My husband was a welder. He opened a welding shop there.
And how long did you live in Medford?
We lived in Medford from 1919 to 1927. Then we moved. It's another story. We moved out on Rogue River. Rogue River is a famous river in Oregon. And bought an abandoned farm out there. And the Depression came. And my husband was sort of a dreamer. He wanted to start a fish hatchery. We got out there, and he built a little house, rustic house for us. We had three boys by this time. And the Depression came. We had a rough time up there, and we made it. And, oh gosh, I'll have to tell you about this. One of these little boys turned out to be a writer. And we lived out there 10 years while he was from seven to 17. And the free and easy life he had up there was something he treasured. When he had his own family, he used to tell stories about those days. And the kids were so impressed, they kept asking for repeat stories. And he thought, well, if they are so impressed, they want... Maybe other people would like to hear that story. So he wrote a book about it. I've got it here someplace. Here he is. This is Wally. Uh-huh. He's in his 60s now.
The Rogue I Remember by Wallace Ort.
Yeah.
Forward by Senator Mark Hatfield.
Yeah. We had a lot of fun with that story.
So this is the story of your home.
Our 10 years up
there. Uh-huh.
On Rogue River. Yeah. Uh-huh. And also, it's a historical account of that area. And this land, or this idea of a fish hatchery that my husband had and never was able to finish up. This is taken over by the government came in there and bought up the land and built a big dam up there. And he tells all about that. It's really quite a story.
So then, how many children did you have?
I had three sons and about my daughter came along in 1934 when the boys were in their teens.
So she was born then when you were living on the Rogue?
Yes.
Uh-huh. And you say you lived there 10 years.
Uh-huh.
Where did you go after that?
We went back to Bedford. The boys were in high school. I wanted them to get a better opportunities. And my husband was not favorably impressed. He wanted them up there. He didn't want them running the streets of Bedford. And they all wanted to go back to Bedford, and I did. So finally, we made it. My little girl, who was about 2 years old, when she was about two and a half, wandered off to the river with a little dog. And I lost, I didn't know where, I was left alone without any help. And I lost her. I had no idea where she'd gone to. Scared the wits out of me. Finally, she came walking up from the river bank with her little dizzy dog. I said, "Where have you been?" Dizzy wanted a drink. She just learned to talk a little bit. And she was down there to give Dizzy a drink and wander back by herself. It gave me such a scare. I made up my mind we were going back to Bedford. By this time, the boys had gone to Bedford. They were boarded out, going to Bedford. They had gotten jobs in there and worked their way through high school. And when my husband's out on a job at the time this happened, when he came back, I put it up to him. I said, "We're going back to Bedford. If you don't want to go, that's your business, but we're going." I figured by that time the boys could support us. They were doing pretty good. They were still in high school, but we were not going to stay up there and let anything more happen to us. We had a rough time up there, but it really is quite a story.
So this was after the Depression then?
Yeah, we were there till 1936. We were just getting back out of the Depression. And then we came to Bremerton when the war work was going on. And then the boys went into Air Corps. And my husband got work in the ammunition depot. We bought a little rundown motel, and I ran that, and he went to work. And we did pretty good there. My girl was 7 years old when we ended up there. We were there about 5 years. When the war was about over, we moved to Tacoma. And we lived there for 22 years. And he died in 63. And I've been living alone for 20 years.
And then after Tacoma, where did you live?
Well, see, he died in 63. I sold a home and moved to Linwood, bought a mobile home, lived in Linwood for 9 years. And I moved to Seattle, lived 2 years. And I went to Bellingham, where I've been since 74. I've been here 9 years, is it 9?
What are the names of your children? I should ask you that.
Well, the oldest one is Daniel. Then comes Wallace. And Robert. And Mary Ann.
And do you have grandchildren?
Oh, yes. I have great-grandchildren. Lots of them. Do you want their names? You don't need their names, do you?
Oh, if you don't want to tell me, that's fine.
I'd like to tell you. I have no secrets, I told you.
Oh, sure.
Dan has two boys, twin boys, Gary and Larry. I had a daughter named Carol. And Wally has a daughter named Lori and a son named Steve. And Bob has a daughter named Kathleen and a son named Robert. And Mary Ann has two sons, Chris and Morgan. That's it.
And then how many great-grandchildren do you have?
Oh, I'll have to count them.
Oh, you don't have to give me all their names, just...
There's two and three or five. Two more, a seven. Two more, nine grandchildren. All very wonderful people.
Well, do any of your children or grandchildren speak Norwegian?
No, none. No. Not a word. Mm. I haven't made any effort to teach any of them. I couldn't see the point in it. I have not kept in touch with Norwegians at all. Mm-hmm. So I'm not proud of that, but it happened that way. My mother never learned to speak English. And I wasn't at home. After I was 15, I was at home enough to keep up with things. When we left Norway in 1901, we really never got together as a family anymore. We were scattered through no fault of our own, it was circumstances. So that's it.
Well, now, was your husband of Scandinavian descent?
No, he was of German descent.
German. Uh-huh. Have you been back to Norway?
I went back to Norway in 1971. Visited my home grounds. It was very, very exciting. I met the man that I had played with as a child. He heard I was coming. I had forgotten all about him. But we had played together as children, and he had remained in the same place all these years. And my cousin, who lived near there, had lived there all her life, never married, kept in contact with his family and told them about our plans to come to Norway. And when we got there, they had flags flying for us. and we were entertained by them. It was very exciting. And, but this man was had a stroke just a few days before I arrived, and I sent word over that I would like to see him when he was able to see us. My sister was with me, the two of us would come over and see him when he was able to see us. Well, we got word the next day that he was ready for a visit. We went over to see him. He was in bed. He never really recovered. But I visited him a couple of times, and when I was home, shortly after I returned home, I got word that he had to pass away.
But he recognized you and he was able to speak to you?
Well, he would not have recognized me, but he remembered me, and he remembered the family, and we talked old times.
Well, I think that's about it. I think we're going to run out of tape again here. One last thing. If you have anything you'd like to share in Norwegian, a prayer, a song, some poem or something that maybe you've written? Or
I have not written anything in Norwegian. No, I was... nothing to be proud of there. The thing that I do recall, when we visited Dagmar, who was my cousin and our hostess when we went back to our home, I recognized her table prayer, which I had long forgotten, and I might repeat that to you, if I can recall it now. I Jesu navn går vi til bord. Mat og drikke. I'm sorry, I started that. I do, it comes back to me once in a while, but...
Well, do you have anything else that you'd like to share? That you may think that is of particular interest?
My grandfather used to hold me on his knee when I was a little wee girl, and he would sing to me, "Ridi, ridi, ranke, hesten heter blanke. Nej, han heter ikke så, men han heter Apelgrå." That's about the only thing I can recall. And I wasn't very big when he said that.
Okay, well, I think we'll wrap it up. And I want to thank you very much.
And this concludes our interview with Mrs. Ort.